Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanta from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego and the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. Many of the business leaders we have on Conscious Curiosity SD are having an impact through social work they do in the community. Who's out there banging on the door of our government to create better legislation from the business perspective? Today, we're going to meet two of them, Sarah Buscheman and Mikey Knapp. Welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD.
Thank you, Jeff. Good to be here.
Mikey is the co-founder and chairman of the board for Business for Good San Diego, and Sarah is the executive manager. Business for Good San Diego is on a mission to unite small business owners to drive policy that improves our community. I'm a big fan, and Business for Good is one of our collaborative partners here on the podcast. In addition to all that great work, Sarah is the founder of Protagonist Content. Love that name. A boutique brand messaging and copywriting company that helps purpose-driven brands get clear on what they need to say, how to say it in a real human way. And Mikey is the co-creator and national director of High Road Restaurants, working with owners across the U.S. to advocate for policies for improving working conditions, increasing wages, and advancing equitable standards in the restaurant industry. I appreciate both of you guys coming in today. Spend a little time to share the story of what you're up to. Also get your backstory as business leaders here in San Diego. So you guys ready to get going?
Yeah.
Well, Mikey, I'm going to start with you since you're the founder. What the heck happened to make you get off the couch and go start Business for Good?
It was actually a bar stool.
Okay, there you go.
I should also say I'm one of the founders, recognize the important work of the other co-founders. But essentially, my part of the story is I was running restaurants here in San Diego at the time. I was also the president of a business improvement district board of directors. And I was sitting at a restaurant that doesn't exist anymore. Rest in peace, Jane's Gastro Pub, my favorite restaurant in San Diego for a while. I was sitting at the bar reading an actual newspaper, and the headline said, San Diego City Council considers minimum wage increase, which business opposes. That was the whole headline. And I thought, wait a second, I'm a business operator here. I have nearly, at that time, 40-something employees. I don't think that way. I would actually like my employees to be able to live near where they work, to be able to afford that. So what is this monolithic voice of business that just gets printed above the fold on the headline with no additional context? That was it, right? It just stuck in my head, or my craw, whatever the heck a craw is. And then I started talking to other colleagues, other business owners and operators throughout the region about this thing that was annoying me in my head. And they said, yeah, I feel the same as you. I don't know why the media would cover this in that way, that the voice of business that has access to these policy advocacy conversations would be monolithic, because there is a diversity of business owners throughout the region. And that's me. That was my sort of seed that was planted in my head. And in the meantime, there were some folks working in coalition trying to put together a movement towards progress in the region that included the voice of small business, the diversity of voices in the business landscape. That movement and my annoyance came together.
That's the co-founders.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I had a conversation with a guy named Kareem Bouri, who was the original executive director of what at the time was Main Street Alliance San Diego. The Main Street Alliance is a national organization that does similar things to what Business for Good does. After about a year of being Main Street Alliance, we decided we wanted to be autonomous and work on some things that Main Street doesn't focus on. We're still friends.
And but we're San Diego.
That's right. The truth is, we wanted to work on immigration, and Main Street Alliance has a high focus on healthcare and doesn't have capacity to give to immigration, at least at the time. You know, this is 2016. So I met Kareem, who, as I said, was executive director. His job was to go around and organize restaurant owners who were interested in making progress through policy advocacy. And he gave me the avenue and opportunity to address my concerns by joining with other business owners and leveraging our collective power to change that idea about what the voice of business in San Diego could really be.
Ah, I love that. Sarah, how'd you get roped in? In a big way. You're the one that actually makes it all happen these days.
True. Well, how I got started was actually a board member at the time in 2018 was a friend and a colleague of mine, Indra Bowers. Indra and I were having a conversation, and I was just talking to her as a solopreneur who had started Protagonist Content. I was working for 3 years with Protagonist Content at that point in 2018. I was saying to her, you know, I'd really love to get in touch with another values-aligned business owner group in San Diego. Does anything like that exist? And so Indra said, I think I know just the person to connect you with, and that's Kareem Bori, the co-founder that Mikey was just speaking about. She said he's a co-founder of this group called Business for Good, and I think that it would be perfect for you.
Title fits anyways, right?
Yeah, title fits. I was like, hey, Business for Good, that is what I'm looking for. Awesome. She put me in touch with Kareem. I got coffee with him, and he made his pitch, which he's so great at, describing the issues facing San Diegans and what Business for Good's mission was. As Mikey said, really leveraging the collective voice of business owners who care here, local business owners, not just the monolithic corporations, and really focusing on 4 key policy action areas in which we can make a difference as business owners. And those 4 areas are immigration, business resources, which is equitable access to capital, among other things, housing and homelessness, those dual crises, and also environmental health in our region. And so I was immediately drawn in, and I just loved what he was doing, what he and Mikey were doing. I had no idea a group like this even existed or could exist. And I started going to the general member meetings and meeting everyone. It was just like an epiphany. Everybody there. I mean, honestly, I joined because of the fact that I wanted to make a difference and wanted to be involved in the larger conversation in San Diego about making a real impact in this area, a region where we can all thrive. And honestly, I tell people I found some of my closest friends in Business for Good just organically. So that is how I got involved in Business for Good. And I started writing a series. Kareem had tapped me to write a series for Business for Good called Things I Wish I Knew, which were really kind of these cool introspective, reflective pieces about business owners, any Business for Good member business owners who are willing to be interviewed about things they wish they knew when they were starting up their business. Aye. That could help us help other business owners learn from that later on. And I really enjoyed doing that. It just gave me even a deeper look into the quality and scope of all of these people. I mean, just they're just so passionate about what they do. And yeah, so from there, I just kind of stayed with the organization, did the content strategy, the brand messaging for the website. And then Danae and Mikey roped me into getting onto the board of directors.
So one step at a time, right?
One step at a time, but I won't even say roped in because it was super fun. So that was 2023. And then, yes, at the end of 2023, when our former managing director, Danae Ramos, needed to take a step back, I really was curious about whether or not I could take the position. I was like, man, this is something I'm just so passionate about, helping Business for Good grow. And I can't really do that at the time because I was working Protagonist full time. And I thought, what if I just scaled that back and I was able to do managing director as well and really dedicate my time to this in a way that I can't do right now? So it's been fantastic. And I'll just kind of stop there.
Awesome.
You go ahead.
So Mikey, define the small business. What does that mean? Because, I mean, we throw out different middle market companies, all these kinds of things. Like from the Business for Good perspective, when you say small company, how are you measuring it? What does that look like?
Well, I should say Business for Good is not exclusive to small businesses in any way. We're more than happy to welcome large companies who are serious about making commitments to progress. But that doesn't mean we don't recognize that some businesses are small. So typically, small business in the definition that policy arranges around is 50 or fewer employees. Sometimes it's 100 or fewer employees. More often than not, when it comes to government programs, which are some of the things that we pay a lot of attention to, 100 or fewer is the common cutoff.
We spoke of 4 specific areas that we're focusing on. Maybe give us a little deep dive on why we picked those. What does that mean? Sarah's pointing at Mikey.
Yeah, sure.
You'll start the run with this and then hand the ball off. Sounds good.
So it's kind of funny because we didn't do a ton of like prep for the conversation, which I actually prefer. I'm glad it's going to be agile. I didn't expect for us to talk as much about some of the important people who have been part of the story of Business for Good before, but I'm really glad that we're having an opportunity to do so because this is a chance to do it again. The way we came up with those 4 issue areas was that once we switched from being a Main Street Alliance chapter to being an autonomous organization called Business for Good San Diego, we needed to write our bylaws, our mission, our vision, and our focus areas, our strategic plan. And we didn't have to do a ton of groundwork because that guy that we just referred to a few times, Kareem, as a really talented organizer, he did one very important thing, which is ask every single person he was in front of at least one of the same questions. And the one question that he asked everybody that we used in this process was, as a business owner, what keeps you up at night? What are you worried about? What particularly causes you stress, anxiety, agita, whatever? And we aggregated the answers and found common concerns, many of them to do with operational systems and how to be profitable, right. Just being a business owner, the normal. The
classic, yeah, the business 101 stuff.
That's right. Yeah. Like I wake up in the morning and I have to now continue to run my business and it has to be profitable and that keeps me up at night. But when folks would answer beyond that, anything to do with policy, advocacy, community engagement, civic responsibility, that was the restless list, right? That was the stuff that we have agency to participate in changing. As again, leveraging our collective power as the voice of independent, locally owned, small, whatever, fill in the blank adjective, business in a region is one of the most trusted voices, almost always at the top two. It's like your doctor, your physician, and your and small business broadly. So
it's not Congress and.
No, in fact, you know, unfortunately, elected people are very low on the list.
Right, exactly.
But what they love to do is connect themselves to the folks who are higher on the list. So you'll often see at elected folks when they do press events, there's always a physician next to them and a small business owner.
Trust me.
Because they're trading on the currency of that trust, right? Yeah, trust me. So we had this list of things that kept people up at night. And when we were developing our strategic plan and where we wanted to focus some of our energies, apart from the operational side of things, internally, how you run a business successfully while doing good, we also wanted to work on the policies that govern our ability to do those things, right? So we had a list. And after doing some parsing of that, we found that those were the four areas that people really wanted to focus on. The business resources one addresses those operational systems. That's the big, huge bucket. It's the hardest one to talk about, kind of the least exciting one for people, but it's also some of the most impactful conversations that we have internally are, well, how do I actually become a high road employer? Like, what does it mean to increase wages for me or improve working conditions? That's what business resources is. But of course, Sarah did mention equitable access to capital was very high on that list. Once we started parsing that data, the answers to that question of what keeps you up at night, the fact that a cisgendered heterosexual white male could come to a bank with one business plan and someone who meets different demographic descriptions could have the same business plan or one with even higher profitability probability would be less likely to get funded or get funded at higher rates or get funded with less money was extremely problematic to almost everyone who addressed that in their conversations through the organizing. That's business resources. As I mentioned, immigration, we have the second busiest or the busiest land border in the world. It goes back and forth with one in, I think, South Asia somewhere, China probably every couple of years. But it's obviously, you know, San Diego is a binational region. As that relates to business, it cannot be ignored. And so that was on the list. At the time, housing and homelessness was not the crisis it is now. It was a crisis for anybody experiencing homelessness or feeling it or experiencing being an unsheltered person in San Diego. But the housing crisis and the cost of living was already, the signals were already up. We could already see that our employees couldn't afford to live near where they worked. People didn't have as much disposable income to buy the goods and services that we provide. That was the third one. And then the fourth one is environmental health. This actually is kind of a bifurcated segment because it's environment, climate, the health of the planet. It's also health, healthcare, the health of the people that make up our businesses.
We're taking care of the people that are in the organization.
Yeah. So we liked that phrasing of environmental health. Shout out to the Environmental Health Coalition based in Southeast or National City, basically. Barrio Logan National City have been doing incredible work for decades here in the region. I wouldn't like to say that we stole the name from them, but we are very proud to share those words with such an admirable organization.
So it's time to brag. So we've been at this for a few years. What's a great story? Like we took on this thing and some movement, get enough collaboration and oomph to actually move something over the hump here. Yeah, we got a good story to share?
We have lots of good stories to share. I wonder if Sarah has one top of mind.
The first thing that comes to mind for me isn't necessarily a policy win. Let Mikey, I always defer to Mikey because he's the policy expert with all of that. But I think organizationally, the biggest business for good win that I can remember is putting together our annual summit. It was huge. So the first year that we decided to do the Business for Good, it's actually called the Doing Business for Good Summit. That was 2022, was our inaugural year. Came from this idea that like, hey, people look to us, leaders, elected officials, other coalitions that are values aligned with Business for Good, they look to us as thought leaders and authorities in this space on policy, on amplifying local business voices, to have a seat at the policymaking table, to really get across to others what it is we need and want for our, not only our own businesses, but our communities, the communities that we serve. And it was kind of like this internal conversation, like, well, why aren't we leading that voice then, right? Why don't we create an event in which we can showcase our thought leadership, really have this open conversation for anyone to come in, find out about us, what it is we do, is a really good opportunity to bring others into the fold, not just local business owners, but also interested individuals in San Diego, just San Diegans who care and want to learn more about the policy going on in their communities and how they can help, and also nonprofits and public sector organizations as well. Bring them into the fold, because it really is a trifecta, right? If we want to address any of these problems, it's not just business, it's not just government, it's not just people, it's all of us together. And that's what Business for Good really aims to do. When I saw that come together, it was kind of that key moment where I was like, Business for Good is really something unique. This is fulfilling a need in our community in San Diego that we do not have otherwise. It's extraordinarily unique. Like, this is the only, as I say, policy forward local business owners organization here. In our breakout sessions too, we had Business for Good members who are experts in their own industries. They were either moderators or presenters on the panels that we offered in these breakout sessions. We also had values aligned folks from the community come in, and it was really three different focus areas.
They're based on the three profiles, personality profiles. So we identified early on in Business for Good that there are three types of people who come to Business for Good and decide that membership is a good value for them. And it's people who are looking to make a difference, people who are looking to make a sale, and people who are looking to make a connection. The three rooms that we have at our summit reflect those three personalities so that we're sure we're serving all of the folks who are members. But the make a sale room is the operational room. How do you operate your business while doing good, do well while doing good? And then the make a connection is the community room. So all of the panels would have something to do with how do we create and strengthen some connective tissue here so that we can help and uplift and support each other. And then the people who are there to make a difference.
That's aspirational.
That's the aspirational.
It just came
room.
To me. Aspirational room.
When in the year do we have this? Is it third, fourth quarter of the year? Is that?
Yeah, we typically have it in Q4. This year, it's still TBD. Our internal summit planning committee kicks off next week because we need that much of a runway to get it started. But with the election this year, I believe Election Day is November 5th. So we wanted to hold the summit before the election, just kind of feed off of that energy and momentum. And so we'll have to see exactly when. It'll probably be October this year, or possibly even late September, so a little bit earlier. But that was a shining moment for me, Jeff, was just like, look at how far we've come from, if you look at the early days.
The bar when, stool to, right, the well, bar 100 stool, people in the room here.
Right,
yeah,
right.
A conversation.
It was just incredible.
Mikey, what stands out to you?
Well, Sarah told you I'm wonky. I'm a policy guy. So for me, the proudest parts are watching local business owners and our coalition partners, supporters in the community, lean into improving policies at either the city or county level, or even sometimes the state level, that govern our ability, regulate our ability to do business. And I'll tell you, this is not maybe the biggest impactful one, the greatest impact, but it's my favorite. I think the biggest impact we had to do with Community Choice Energy and helping stand up San Diego Community Power and fighting back against our monopoly utility here that charges the highest rates in the country. So we were part of a large coalition, but the business voice in that advocacy was critical. And I'm very, very proud not only of that process, but also of the outcome, which is that now San Diego has local control.
So Karen Burns is...
Karen Burns is the CEO of San Diego Community
Power. She was on the podcast.
It wouldn't be right for me to leave out the name of Nicole Kapretz, who is the founder and CEO of Climate Action Campaign, who really did heroic work getting that whole process was years long. She was critical in making it happen.
Yeah, so it's amazing the work they're doing.
Hugely proud of all that. But my favorite is commercial composting, which now is not only available in San Diego, it's ubiquitous, but, you know, I'm a restaurateur by trade. I've run restaurants for nearly 20 years. I had a restaurant in Portland, Oregon. I opened it in, you know, we opened it in teens, 2014, I think. We got there, the city of Portland and the state of Oregon said, you are required to compost organic waste. You cannot, as a restaurant or a commercial business at all, throw things that could be composted into the landfill. And they would check, you know, there was proactive enforcement of that. So everybody had a green bin and you had to use it. okay, cool. This is great. You know, as an environmentally focused person, I thought, what an incredible policy. Like, this has got to be diverting quite a lot of organic waste, which, by the way, creates methane, one of the most harmful greenhouse gases. And then I come back to San Diego to our restaurant here, and I said, let's do this. It's easy. You get a green bin and you scrape the plates when the customer doesn't finish their meal. You scrape it in there and you send it off to a biodigester. And then I started looking into how to get a company that would take it there for us and discovered that in San Diego, the city of San Diego, it was illegal to pay someone to haul organic waste from your business to the landfill or to a
illegal
to an organic waste processing compound. First of all, there were no big biodigesters in San Diego.
It was one of the problems, right?
Yeah, except for at the Miramar Greenery, and it was at capacity. It wasn't taking new customers. San Diego has the largest number of farms and community gardens as a county in the entire country.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Number one in the whole country. That's not because we have such huge ones. It's that we have so many small ones, right? And a lot of them would love the kind of nutritious fertilizer that you get out of doing composting or vermiculture, which is technically what it's called. So I had these companies come and do it for me, and they said, just so you know, this is like not exactly legal, but we're trying to work on that. They were taking our organic waste to local farms and community gardens where they would perform
late
vermiculture.
Late at night, they were
They did it in the middle of the day, but they just kind of said, like, we're in the legal gray area. And so without getting into the details, nitty gritty, wonky stuff, happy to answer those questions for anybody interested. It was illegal. And so we had to create policy that allowed it, carved out a space for these small organic waste haulers to do what those people were already doing and bring them out of the shadows and into legitimate business operations that were helping the climate, helping reduce waste. So it felt really aligned, not just with some of the goals of the organization that we had outlined earlier for Business for Good, but personally, as a restaurateur, watching all that food waste go into the landfill when I know that it could create nutrient-rich soil was kind of heartbreaking for me. So I'm really, really proud of that. It was a very precise and unique policy that only affected a few people because a couple years later, large-scale commercial composting became a thing here. Now, Edco,
it's official now, yeah.
Yeah, Edco bought, invested in a beautiful, you know, kind of weird to use that word for like composting, but a big biodigester that does a lot of that work now. And companies across the region are able to do that. Yeah.
That's a great story. I always love there's always these things behind this. The average person, you would never know that illegal to what? Impossible. Well, let's shift the gear for a moment here. I want to talk about you guys. Who are the people, if I show up at For Business Good, what kind of folks are there, right? And you're the leaders in the front of the room. You're the guys we're going to meet. So tell us a little bit about you, Sarah. Like, tell us about your business, what you're doing. How do you get the real story out that should be heard? What does that all look like?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. So my business, when I started it in 2015. And yes, it's called Protagonist Content. The name, I'll just say, came about because I am a writer and have always been a writer, a creative writer. And so I just started thinking about ways in which I could kind of fuse my love for writing with an actual business without it sounding like super cheesy. And maybe it does still sound super cheesy. I don't know. But what came to mind was Protagonist, and not me being the protagonist, but the people that I work with. So the organizations, the brands that I work with are essentially what I kind of say is like helping these protagonists of the world, people that are trying to move the needle in some way, be heard among the roar of, I think right now it's 1.2 billion websites we have out on the internet, and that grows, I mean, exponentially by the day. Yes, as somebody who's just been a creative writer for years and then has also written in, you know, business writing, technical writing, grant writing to some extent over the years, I felt like this was something that I would be pretty good at helping people with. And because I also saw such a dearth of good content. When I went to certain business websites, well, they would come to me, first of all, and say, I'm trying to get my message across, but I hate my website copy. It sucks. Doesn't feel like us. It feels stilted and generic, and I feel like I'm just putting keywords in there to like make it sound that like I'm a website designer. Like I put on there something about doing quality websites or something, but like, you know, something that they think their audience wants to hear, but it doesn't resonate with the audience. It doesn't resonate with them. It doesn't feel authentic. And that's really difficult for people. It's difficult for me as a writer.
It's usually hardest to do it for yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's a challenge.
Oh, absolutely. I struggled with my own website, writing my own website copy for like weeks. I'm like, you know, because it's true.
Maybe you should hire somebody.
Right. I know. I probably should have. getting that distance and perspective, right, is super important. You just can't see your way out of it when you're in the middle of it. So I know that a lot of businesses really struggle with that. And again, kind of going back to the business for good paradigm, leveraging the voices of smaller and local businesses to really make a difference, right? All of these giant corporations have the budget to hire all kinds of copywriters and messaging experts and comms experts and all that. And a lot of times their copy is better because of that, and their brand positioning is better and stronger. And I thought, you know, I'm halfway decent at what I do. Like, I think that I could help smaller businesses. I could be the person that does that for them for far less budget. I kind of positioned myself as this person who can really get to the heart of what people are trying to say and who they're trying to say it to very quickly. And that's something that just kind of comes naturally to me. I took that knack and I centered it, and I was kind of like, let me just bring this to...
I got a living out of it.
Yeah, make a living out of this and really help
organizations.
That's kind
of my philosophy. You know, what's the thing you do really good? Can you make money doing that? Or
yes.
How do you like get to do that on weekends? No, how do you bring that to life?
Right.
Love that, Sarah.
Right, exactly. So that's how I came to do my business. And it's really cool now because I kind of, on the protagonist side, I really am still helping these brands who don't have ginormous budgets, but really helping them hone in on what it is exactly that you need with no frills. Like, let's just get to the meat of it and the heart of it. There's not all this other stuff. Then I have this awesome job at Business for Good, which kind of gave me a different sort of challenge. My undergrad was actually in business. So I have a business degree and finance degree. And in years past, before I moved fully into the creative writing realm or the writing realm in which I work now and running my own business, I for years worked in, well, a for-profit business, but then also the nonprofit sector as accounting and finance. And so when I tell people that, they're like, really? You don't seem like the type of person. And I'm like, well, you know, I was good at that too. I mean, but it wasn't my passion. I could see myself just getting disinterested and uninterested in it very quickly, which is why I made the jump to going back to school and getting my master's degree in English to move into a career in writing after that. But I think all of this, long story short, is to say that it really gave me a great foundation for where I am in Business for Good now as managing director, because I have a really strong business background from working for other businesses and then running my own. So I had that, but then I also kind of have that creative messaging side of things that always keeps me open to other perspectives and looking for ways to improve Business for Good in this really kind of creative thinking way, not just meeting like KPIs and metrics of the business world, which is, I think, a lot of leaders feel kind of penned in by that sometimes, but really having these other directions where I can use my creativity and my flow for that. So
nice. Mikey, I mean, you long time in the restaurant business, starting out with dishwashing or whatever, running, owning, and I don't know what you're doing now, which is a really amazing job. So maybe give us a little bit of that story.
Yeah, I'm horrible at brevity, but I'm going to do my best.
Me too.
So I started as a dishwasher at TGI Fridays when I was 15 years old. I worked every position in what we call the back of the house or the kitchen.
Did you know my wife? She was the hostess.
Oh, at TGI Fridays?
Yeah. It's her claim to fame for her first job.
Locations.
Yeah, it does the same location.
So I worked.
You got the same tattoo, though.
Yes, our flair. Yeah, I worked in every position in the back of the house or the kitchen until I was told I was bad at all of them. They kicked me out to what we call the front of the house or the dining room. And then I worked as a host, a busser, a food runner, a server, bar back, bartender, assistant manager, manager, and eventually owner. But really, my work experience kind of coincided with my college experience a lot. Restaurant work is cool because there's a low barrier to entry. You get on-the-job training, and then that training kind of travels with you anywhere. If you can bartend in the U.S., you can bartend all over the world. And if you can bartend in San Diego, you can bartend in any place in the U.S. pretty much. So that was cool, and it helped me pay for school. UCSD, that's why I live here. I moved here to go to UCSD. I came from the Santa Clarita Valley, which is just outside of Los Angeles. And while I was in school, I studied social movements. My degree is in cultural theory, which is kind of cool because you could study whatever you want and call it cultural theory. And that's what I did. I studied social movements. And I thought I was going to go get a PhD and teach cultural theory because that's what you do with a degree in cultural theory. But the schools that I believed I would get my PhD from didn't know that they were supposed to accept me into their programs. So when I was rejected from
my first
round.
I hate those details. Like that,
yeah. Yeah, you need to be accepted. Isn't that? It's just a real bummer. But I didn't get into the programs to which I applied the first time. And you got to wait a year, right, to apply again. Second time around, I'm casting a wider net. But now I'm a little bit more grounded in reality that there is the possibility I may not get accepted again. So I should have probably a plan B. I spent some time thinking about what it was that I really cared about. if it wasn't academia and it was hospitality. It was a thing I'd been doing that had been supporting all these choices I'd been making the whole time. It was right there under my nose. So I promised myself, if I didn't get in again, I'm going to spend the same amount of time and energy learning everything I possibly can about hospitality that I would have in a PhD program, so which is 7 years. And spoiler alert, I didn't get in again to my PhD programs, and that therefore I did this
restaurant tour,
four persons PhD in hospitality. And I ended up taking over running this restaurant company with two of my best friends, their brother and sister, and they had inherited this restaurant from their dad. And so we ran it together, and that's how we ended up opening another one in Portland, Oregon. We opened a third restaurant in North County, San Diego in 2019. But the whole time I was still in this social movement thing in my head, you know, the stuff that I had studied and how I wanted to kind of contribute somehow in some way in improving people's lives, even folks outside the four walls of the businesses that we ran. So I kept finding myself through volunteer opportunities in advocacy spaces. And we talked about the story about how I ended up co-founding Business for Good, but that's kind of what led me to it. And then eventually during the pandemic, at the very beginning of the pandemic, I was called by a friend who is now my boss named Saru Jayaraman, founder of One Fair Wage, as well as the Restaurant Opportunity Center. And she said, you know, hey, Mikey, I know all these restaurants are closed. I know independent restaurants are really hurting, but even more importantly, so are all of their workers. And we've got some philanthropic support here. There's a lot of funders that are looking for ways to help these independent restaurants and their workers. And we need someone to help conceive of a program and help implement that program to make that happen. There's two types of hungry people right now, people who are hungry for food, people who are hungry to help. How do we put those people together? So we conceived of and implemented a program called High Road Kitchens. We distributed grants to restaurants across the country to bring back their staff in a safe way to prepare and distribute meals to people who were food insecure at the time. And those folks, the people who received the grants, independent restaurant owners, agreed to not only feed people, but to take a race and gender equity training as it relates to recruitment, hiring, training, and promotional practices within their businesses, specifically focusing on implicit bias and as it relates to race and gender. There is deep, deep race and gender inequities in the hospitality industry. So not only were we helping feed people, but we were hopefully helping, and I do believe successfully helping, build a more resilient and sustainable sort of floor on the operational systems that restaurateurs employ. And that felt great. And my restaurants were closed at the time, so I was able to focus a lot on that. And my restaurant work, which I still did, was mostly filling out applications for government relief and helping my employees who didn't have a job to come to because we were closed figure out how to apply for their relief and all that. So that felt great. And then when everybody got vaccinated and we were able to open the restaurants again, my best friends who I was running that company with said, hey, buddy, you know, time to like come back fully to work. And so I did. But about 3 or 4 months in, I realized, oh, my gosh, now my heart is being pulled in this advocacy direction much more than it had previously. And so I decided to transition out of running restaurants. And we, you know, that company hired someone really incredible to replace me, and she's doing a great job. Shout out to Karen Barnett, former owner of Small Bar, who now runs the Mesa Family Restaurant Group, which is what I used to do with those two, my best friends, Ponce and Rocio. So I left and I wanted to work in policy. So I became policy director at previously mentioned Climate Action Campaign, a local advocacy organization trying to fight the climate crisis. And I did that for a little over a year until Saru called me back. And she said, you know, we've got all this momentum on this restaurant worker justice policy across the country. We've got campaigns moving in 13 states. We really need someone as effective as you were to come and help lead the restaurant owner part of our work. And what would it take to get you back? And I sort of said, well, this call is a good first step. So I came back to this organization again, One Fair Wage, in the middle of last year, maybe May or June of last year. And that's what I've been doing ever since.
Nice. What a great story. COVID opened up some doors for you.
It did. It closed some doors and windows and opened doors. And I mean, in the end, you got to find silver lining in everything, right?
So we got to put a bow on this. Two folks trying to make a difference here in San Diego. Kind of briefly, what are you optimistic about? Where are we going?
I can start. I'm optimistic about the organization itself, Business for Good. I'm very optimistic with our current board of directors. Very engaged, super talented people. I'd love to name them all. It would take too long. I'm incredibly excited about Sarah in her role as managing director. Now she's been in this role for a couple months, maybe 3 months now. And one of them was December, which as we all know, as people who have run businesses, that month doesn't really exist in the real world. So she's just really taken the baton and is running full speed. And I'm very, very optimistic and excited about the future for the organization. which means that I'm also excited about the policy future in the region as it relates to what it means for businesses to succeed here. It is not just the quarterly profits. It really has to do with what is our investment in our employees? What is our investment in the community? And what does it mean to thrive here? And defining that is the role of our members, and seeing the membership be so engaged and empowered is giving me quite a lot of optimism.
Wonderful. Got Sarah.
What Mikey's saying in particular, those points 100% about the organization itself, Business for Good, really feels like in 2024, it's finding its footing. We're in the midst of another election year, which I think also gives people a natural sort of momentum and urge to become involved in something a little bit bigger than themselves. I have to say, like, the authenticity of Business for Good, I really can't underscore that enough. We really are here as local business owners who care and want to see San Diego improve. I think that we are well on our way to that. When you had asked about my background, Jeff, there was one thing I wanted to mention, which was, I think, how I kind of came into wanting to help businesses in this way, you know, meaningful brands, people who care, trying to get their message out. I mean, that really came from my upbringing in two ways. I mean, I was raised very working class. Both of my parents were working class, did not go to college. My dad's a Vietnam veteran, and they worked very hard. And one major thing in my life was just kind of seeing those inequities, especially in the healthcare, like as Mikey was saying, in healthcare. You know, my parents were both self-employed at one point. My dad was a tool salesman and my mom ran an in-home daycare, and we just didn't have healthcare. I remember we just didn't have healthcare for like 6 years. Like, my parents were just like, that's too expensive. We're not buying it, and we're self-employed, so we're not getting it. And so don't anybody get sick. You know, and it was like we went to the doctor here and there. But I feel like that kind of upbringing also in my time period, like the generation of which I'm a part of, where I'm a Gen Xer. And it's just kind of that disaffected, I don't know, ennui of the Gen X generation. You just kind of don't expect things to be amazing. We kind of all like grew up a little bit like that, like cautiously optimistic. But that made me really a fan of searching out anything that was genuine, anything that was authentic, because I kind of had that whole disaffected outlook at just like the world in general. Anything that had that shiny bit of authenticity to it, I always went after. So at Business for Good, I feel like there's a lot to be said about that, of that kind of authentic journey together.
Well, I want to thank the two of you for coming in. Thank you for all the great work you're doing. They were nice enough to invite me in to help facilitate their annual strategic planning meeting this year. So I had a chance to meet the board that Mikey's talking about, and it is a group of awesome people and got some great plans for 2024. So appreciate what you guys are doing here in the community. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
So that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, of course, and Cause San Diego, who are all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from GL Greek Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, for we're all counting on you.